What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is Pucks and Seven with Ryan Payton.
I'm Lincoln, back here on Pucks and Seven, NHL host and reporter at the Hockey News. A lot more to that resume. We'll probably touch a bit on baseball, too. I'll throw some things. Throw a curveball. Oh, yeah, look at you. You're all ready to go. I'll throw a curveball at you later on in the show. Anyway, good to have you back on. I have to say this to the start with. Happy belated Thanksgiving to you, of course.
Thank you very much, or as you in Canada call it, Happy Thursday. I appreciate it.
Is there a hangover involved in Thanksgiving for you, like turkey hangover? Do you have that?
Not really. I spent Thanksgiving, I didn't travel or anything. I just got together with some friends and we kept it very low key, very amazing. Chill. So yeah, there might be a little bit more of a Christmas hangover, but Thanksgiving was okay.
Yeah, up in Canada. So whenever that happens, it's that crazy, you know, Black Friday, all that cyber whatever week. So it's just nuts. So we have the hangover from shopping. Not that I did a lot, but you know what I mean. Anyway, we're going to get into a whole bunch of stuff with the NHL. I want to get into a game specifically with Connor Bedard last night, just how incredible this guy is this season. He's amazing, period. But I don't know, different level right now. We'll talk about the Avalanche. We'll look at the underachieving teams, at least two of them close to us, Nashville for you, Toronto for me, and we'll do 77 seconds to end the show in just a bit. But you and I have covered the game a long time, and we've seen a lot of games, a lot of players. We've covered so many different storylines. I can't remember, don't know if you agree, if you're in the same boat, but I can't recall in recent memory that so much has happened in the first couple of months of an NHL season, and things that have happened I did not expect to happen. I don't know where you stand on that, but what we've seen in the first 2 months, I just hope the next number of months is exactly the same as what we've seen in these 60 days or so.
Oh, yeah. I mean, from the good, the bad, the ugly, the confusing, I mean, so much has happened. I mean, yeah. From, like you just mentioned, Connor Bedard and the young players really popping off in a big way. You've got veterans who are having amazing seasons. I think guys like Brad Marchand, I don't think anyone would have expected him to be such an impactful player during the regular season at his age for the Florida Panthers right now, but he has kind of been keeping them afloat at least for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Guys like Scott Wedgwood being in the Vezina conversation. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, all of the injuries that have happened, of course, that's never positive news, never anything you want to be talking about. But, you know, it does kind of come with the territory, I think, of the condensed Olympic schedule. Guys are playing a lot more back-to-backs, less recovery time. So you're seeing a lot more injuries, I think. But then we've also seen more even off-ice injuries, I guess. Right. Guys like Jack Hughes cutting his hand.
Yeah.
Different things like that. It's like, man, you got to wrap these guys in bubble wrap or something. But yeah, it's been definitely has not been a dull moment so far.
Yeah, no team dinners out anymore with Jack Hughes when they're involved with that. They're playing well. Of course, Jack is out, but they're playing well. You mentioned Wedgwood in Colorado. It's just been an amazing... I guess let's kind of begin with that, even though we've touched on a whole bunch already. The Avalanche are just a step in ahead of everybody else. Now, what I mean by that is, again, if you look at the stats and numbers, they lead the league. Yeah, they're the best team in the league statistically. They've lost once in regulation, which isn't, you know, crazy. But Dallas is close. Dallas is playing well also. If it wasn't for Colorado's start, we'd probably be talking about how good Dallas is. Yes, they are good. But can anybody – do you see any weakness at all in this Avalanche team? Because I don't.
I don't right now. No, I mean, I really don't know. I think that this is a, you know, this is a Colorado team that I really thought going into the season, I was like, well, you know, they might, their window's still definitely open, but they might be approaching the end of the window. And so I just don't know that they really have it there. But man, did they prove me wrong, at least so far. I mean, the biggest weakness on this team, I think, at least historically in recent history, has been goaltending. And as I just mentioned, they completely, I mean, they were so aggressive last season, mid-season, which you really don't see a lot. They, you know, had this upheaval. They completely overturned their entire goaltending tandem. They brought in Wedgewood and Blackwood, both now playing incredibly. As I mentioned, Wedgewood, unfortunately, looked like he got injured on Tuesday, but they're not treating it like anything serious. I think it's more precautionary, but he's been playing out of his mind, which is just incredible for a guy who's a career backup. He's been incredible. Blackwood has been playing really well. Both of those guys now on the short list for Team Canada in the Olympics, which is something I never thought we would be saying. but the goaltending has been incredible. I think defensively, I mentioned, you know, veterans really stepping up. Brent Burns at what, 40, 41, however old he is, still just absolutely making an impact out there. And then, of course, you can never count out a team that has Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar. And just you can't ever bet against those guys.
Such a bonus to have one of the best in the game when it comes to forwards and the best defenseman in the game today. I don't think there's any argument with that. There's a lot of great blue liners, but Cale Makar is the best defenseman in the game. I want to bring this up with you. I'm glad we just talked about the Avalanche. I was watching the Toronto game last night against the Panthers, and there was a discussion that was brought up on the broadcast. And the discussion essentially was this. It was about 97 in Edmonton, McDavid, and 29 in Colorado with MacKinnon. The question was, has MacKinnon surpassed McDavid right now as perhaps the best in the game at this moment? What do you think?
I mean, right now at this moment, I think there's a decent argument for that. Yeah, I think that what he's doing is just, I mean, he's, you look at it in terms of, obviously, they're both incredible players, and you look at their individual accomplishments, individual statistics, they're both performing at a very high level. But if you're looking at it in terms of a traditional kind of MVP conversation, like who is the most valuable to his team? I mean, look where the Oilers are and look where the Avalanche are. I mean, it kind of speaks for itself a little bit, I think. Again, it's not necessarily fair to expect one player to completely carry an entire team on his back, and not even to suggest that MacKinnon is doing that. As we mentioned, we've got plenty of other guys making an impact in Colorado, but I think MacKinnon, he's such a dynamic player. He's responsible defensively as well, which I think is a part of his game that gets overlooked a lot. But obviously he's a really dynamic scorer. He can just do everything. And I think that as MacKinnon goes, so go the Avalanche. I don't know that you can even necessarily say that about the Oilers right now with McDavid.
No, you can't. There, Edmonton, it's one thing to have two of the best in the game in Draisaitl and McDavid, but as we've seen, two players can't carry the team as far as they can. It's hard. It's very hard. But yeah, it's just kind of a neat thing that came on the broadcast last night. I hadn't thought of that before. I mentioned Bedard, Celebrini, Matthew Schaefer, what he's doing in New York. That kid is just incredible for the age that he's at and what he's gone through off the ice, especially. Leo Carlson in Anaheim. Out of those four, who has impressed you the most with those players I just mentioned, the Bedard, Celebrini, Schaefer, and Carlson?
Well, you know, I don't want to throw shade on any of those guys because they've all been impressive. They really have. And to say that one has impressed me the most is not to say that the others haven't impressed at all. But for me, I have been very impressed by Macklin Celebrini this year. I think that, you know, after the year he had last year, of course, very impressive, was a Calder finalist. And then he, you know, he was injured for a little bit, but still ended up having a really exciting rookie season. Of course, there's always the question of the, you know, the sophomore slump. Is it going to hit him? It really hasn't. I mean, he's still a teenager. and he's doing things that only some of the all-time greats in this game have done mm-hmm. at his age. I mean, mm-hmm. he's being mentioned in the same breath as guys like Gretzky, Crosby, Lemieux, just for the points that he has, the offense that he's generated as a teenager. I think it's Gretzky, Crosby, and Lemieux are the only players who've scored 40 points or more in 27 games as a teenager, which
that's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. And so, yeah, I mean, that's pretty good company to be in. I mean, obviously he's been, and you know, for a little callback here, only guy in the league who has more points right now than Celebrini is Nathan MacKinnon. So that's great company to be in as well. So I think if you look at what he's done, obviously that top line in San Jose with Smith and Toffoli, they've, you know, generated a ton of offense together. And it's been, they've just got such great chemistry. He's been productive at 5-on-5, but on the power play as well, I want to say he's got like 7 power play points in his last 8 to 10 games, something like that. So he's been doing really well on special teams as well. But yeah, again, all of those guys have been impressive, but I give this one to Celebrini.
What I love too, is that the players I mentioned that we just talked about, they're on teams that I want to see succeed. I want Chicago to get back to that point. I want Anaheim to keep going. I want San Jose to keep going. I'd love to see the Islanders, right? So they have these four pieces in place and their respective teams that you continue to build around. I want to go back to Bedard for a second. There was a moment last season after the Four Nations rosters were announced for the USA and Canada, and Bedard did a post-game interview on the ice, and he looked ticked when it was obviously, I think, announced earlier on that day, the roster, and he wasn't on the team. And he was asked about it, and I think he said something like, yes, I'm not happy I did make the team. I think that did something to him that day and that night. I really do, because this season, the mental approach seems to be stronger. The team is playing better. He is playing the best hockey, Emma. Hasn't been in the league a long time, but he's playing the best hockey in the NHL that we've seen him play. And last night, Tuesday night, prime example, the stuff that he did against the Vegas Golden Knights, too bad they lost, but the stuff that he did against Vegas, unreal.
Yeah, he's a guy that I have really wanted to see succeed as well. You know, you're starting to see, obviously, I don't know if much of my audience in Nashville would like to see Chicago succeed at anything, but I think that I personally, you know, for that young core that they're starting to build, you know, it's been rough going there in Chicago for a while, and you're kind of starting to see it, you know, coming into view a little bit of what this is going to look like with this young core. And I think that Bedard, again, just watching him last year has been, it was hard to watch. It was really hard to watch. And I was seeing, you know, how much of the conversation revolved around, well, Bedard is slipping, Bedard's having the sophomore slump, he's not performing at the level they expect him to. And it's kind of like, okay, first of all, that's not even accurate. He was still almost at like a point per game at one point last year, and people are like, well, it's not enough. And to my earlier point, it's like, well, look who he's playing with. Like, look at the team that they built around him. And, you know, obviously they went through a coaching change last year, which, again, I don't know that the coach was necessarily the biggest issue there, but, you know, often the coach falls on the sword for problems mm-hmm. like that. But mm-hmm. I think it was the roster construction. I mean, you have a generational talent in Connor Bedard, and you go out and surround him with guys, and I mean, no disrespect, but guys like Teuvo Teravainen, like, mm-hmm. that's the best you can do. You know, again, no disrespect, but it's like you need to put him in a position to succeed. And we've been seeing a little bit more of what he's capable of this season.
They were also trying, I think, too, to surround him with support and people to stick up for him on the ice and that kind of thing. But okay, that's fine. You're not going to win hockey games like that. You need talent around you. Whatever you want to do on any team, these young players, you're good, but you can be better if you have better talent around you. So, yeah, I think that they're actually doing that. You mentioned Nashville, the whole discussion between the Nashville audience, looking at Chicago and all that. So both of our respective cities that were in Toronto and Nashville, let's start with Nashville. Ryan O'Reilly's calling himself out. He did that not too long ago. Barry Trotz calling the whole team out. He did that not too long ago. where are you at with what is going on in Nashville, and what do you think is going to happen? We're a little ways away from the deadline. It'll be here, though, before you know it. I mean, are there changes going to happen before this? Because it just seems that they can't continue on being like this.
You would think. I mean, yes, as far as O'Reilly calling himself out, I've got to be honest. I talk to Factor all the time, and we get that after wins sometimes from him. Okay. Like it's kind of become a running joke in the Nashville media. That's like, oh, they lost. O'Reilly's out back setting himself on fire right now, because right. That's just kind of how he gets. Of course, the one interview, it was a little extreme where he said that I'm pathetic and I can't make a 6-foot pass to save my life, things like that. Of course, since then, he's gone on a little bit of a run for himself. So, you know, that kind of thing, it went viral, but it's really not that unusual for him.
Okay.
Barry Trotz calling out players in the media. And I actually wrote about this for Hockey Hot Stove last week, and it's something that I've been trying to put my finger on it for a while, and I think I finally figured it out. It's that Barry Trotz needs to work on his messaging a lot, because he is still speaking to the media and he is still speaking to his players through the media. That's something that a coach does. That's not something that a GM does. And I think that a lot of people are saying, well, Barry Trotz, he wants to coach. He wants to get back to coaching. First of all, no, he doesn't. Mm-hmm. Second of all, I think that it's not that he's necessarily bad at being a GM or he doesn't know what he's doing, but I think the way that he's, you know, framing his messaging needs a lot of work, because it's coming across as very head in the sand, I have no idea what I'm doing, which I don't think is the case. But I think that, you know, when you're a head coach, a lot of your job is to block out the noise. You can't be too concerned with the external noise. You have to focus on, you know, the game and focus on what's in front of you. As a GM, you have to listen to the noise. That's the job. I mean, you have to listen to what fans are saying. You have to speak to the fans. And Barry Trotz is still only concerned with speaking to his players and speaking to the coaching staff. And I think that that is creating this massive disconnect, understandably, with the fan base in Nashville. He's saying, well, I think the coaches are doing a great job. And I would know because I was a coach. And so I'm not firing the coaches. That's fine. But that's not how you can't say it that way to the fan base. They're not going to be happy with that. You keep saying, well, it's not coaching. It's not coaching. I think it's the players that are the problem. Well, Barry, who brought the players there? Mm-hmm. That was you.
I think you need to
take a little bit of accountability there. And I think that he's lacking that, at least in a public facing forum, that he's not taking accountability. I think the way that he frames things definitely needs some work, because you can say, look, I believe in our coaches. That's fine. But you also have to acknowledge that the product that we're seeing right now, worst team in the league, mm-hmm. or second worst now, I guess, after they beat Calgary. But this is not acceptable. You need to acknowledge that. And I think Barry Trotz is not doing that publicly. He's not acknowledging.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays, decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa, got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments, Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels, Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hey, this is Steve Gorman, radio host, sports commentator, former drummer for the Black Crowes. The winter holidays are here, a time for festive celebrations, family gatherings, and ringing in the new year. Whether it's a holiday party, a night out with friends, or just relaxing by the fire with a few drinks, it's a season full of good cheer. But here's something else to add to your holiday plans, a safe and sober ride home. Just like in sports and music, always have a game plan. And the most important part of any plan is sticking to it. If you plan to drink, take that plan a step further. Call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or have a designated driver lined up before the night begins. Drinking and driving is a decision that can change your life and the lives of others forever. A DUI, a crash, an injury, the consequences are real and lasting. So please, for your sake and for everyone else on the road, make the smart choice. Get a sober ride home. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
And he's not taking any kind of accountability for it. So as far as what changes could come, you know, I think that obviously coaching change is not one of them unless ownership steps in and says this needs to happen. But I frankly don't see that happening with Bill Haslam.
I was going to ask you that. Group. Okay.
Not this year. Anyway, I think right now Haslam is very much in the information gathering stage. Mm-hmm. And so as long as he sees, you know, I see a lot of fans saying, oh, Brunette's lost the room. He, you know, first of all, based on what? What are you? It's low hanging fruit. It's easy to say, well, obviously they're losing, so it's the coach's fault. And it's like, I don't see a team. I don't see a guy that's lost the room. I mean, you look at the way that they played in the first game that they played in Sweden against Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. They were down 1-0 for the entire game and then literally clawed their way back, fought to stay in it, scored in the final minute, ended up winning it in overtime. That's not a team that has given up on playing. That's not a team that's given up playing for their coach. Again, I think it's just a lot of it is the roster construction, and that goes back to Trotz. So if we're talking about changes that need to be made, I think every guy on an expiring contract needs to be gone by the deadline. I mean, you're talking Michael Bunting, Eric Halla, Tyson Jost. I mean, a lot of these guys. Now, the problem is they don't have any centers, so they need to figure that out. But, you know, Michael McCarron is another one. So I think that they really need to start putting more emphasis on the youth, the young players. Barry kept saying it. He kept saying, oh, we're going to bring these young players up. Well, we haven't seen them. We've seen them, but not in prominent roles. And so that's the change that needs to start happening.
Despite all that, is the group in the room, despite the struggles, are they a tight-knit group? Like, are they kind of okay? You know what? Yeah, we're going through, you know what? But is there a sense of still like a nice fitting group in that room?
There is. And I think that it's, you know, it's unfortunate. A lot of the, frankly, erroneous and untrue reports and rumors that have gotten out there about the team is toxic and there's this toxic energy, and it's like, it's not. Clearly anyone who's saying that has never been in the locker room. They haven't talked to these guys. I mean, you've got guys like Ryan O'Reilly and Steven Stamkos, complete pros, like total pros with the way they handle themselves. And obviously they want to win, right? They've both won cups before. They don't want to be in this situation, but they're not taking it out on each other. I mean, O'Reilly might be taking it out on himself because that's what he does, but I mean, they're not taking it out on each other, and they are very committed to winning and they want to win as a group. I mean, you look at against Calgary, Ozzie Weisblatt scored his first NHL goal. Schaefer scored his first NHL goal. Fantastic moment. Ozzie, of course, lost his brother tragically earlier in the year. Probably could have had, and watching Steven Stamkos, we talked to Steven Stamkos after the game. He, of course, reached 1,200 points, not too shabby, but he was asked about Ozzie, and he said, yeah, that kid probably should have had 20 by now. I mean, the way that he's been going at it, and you know, you see the support that they have for the younger players, and they're not old veterans just checked out, only care about themselves. I mean, the Andrew Brunette said that the reaction from the entire bench when Ozzie scored his first goal was the biggest reaction, the biggest explosion he's seen from that group all year. So they really care about each other. And so it's unfortunate, the rumors out there about toxicity and things like that, because it's just not true. I mean, if there's any toxic energy, it's because, yeah, the team is losing and they hate losing. It's frustrating. Yeah. So whether it's the players, the fans, like, we're all frustrated. Everyone is. So it's not coming from inside the room, though.
I saw the reaction on the bench for both of those goals, and it was just, it was awesome. It was so good to see that. Let's shift to Toronto. So I'm going to say same kind of thing, right, with what's going on, and it's not been a good start at all for the Maple Leafs. There's been discussion about Craig Berube. Is he on the hot seat? Of course he can't replace Mitch Marner. They tried, they didn't. No need to bring that up again, because it just didn't happen and it's not going to happen. So kind of outside the market of Toronto, with what you, and if you've spoken to different people, what's the mindset here and the thinking of what's going on with the Maple Leafs right now?
You know, I think the sting of losing Marner, obviously it's something that was going to hang over sort of like a cloud over Toronto for a while. And they really, I think, needed, what needed to happen was that Toronto needed to get off to a hot start. Yeah. Whether they were able to maintain that, you know, it, neither here nor there, I think it would have come up eventually. But what they needed to do was get off to a strong start to say, hey, essentially, we don't need him, or, you know, like, we're going to be fine without him. Yeah. They got off to a start in which they tripped over their own feet, I think. And it's been really rough. Obviously, they've dealt with a lot of injuries and guys taking time away from the team, which has been, you know, of course, it's hard to get into any kind of rhythm when that happens. But yeah, I mean, you knew you weren't going to replace Marner. Like you said, there is no replacement for Marner. But there are guys that I think you would have expected who would have maybe stepped up into larger roles. And I think that they're asking a lot of guys who may not be able to fully step into that role. And you knew it was going to be a replacement by committee situation for losing Marner. But I think what's been surprising to me about Toronto is their goaltending, for once, actually looks fantastic. And it's ironic where it's like, oh, they finally have the, you know, the goaltending, it's finally figured out. If all these guys can stay healthy, you know, even without Stolarz, you have Hildeby and you have Wall, and these guys, they look very exciting. So I feel like there's this hope that, okay, well, this team is better than they look on paper. So if they can get it together, they finally have the goaltending that's going to back them up and that's going to support them. I think good goaltending can take you a long way, but I don't think it can take you all the way. And I think that, to me, I mean, maybe this is cynical of me, but I've seen a lot of people saying, oh, look, this is so great. They've got their crease figured out. If they can just get it together offensively, then they'll be set. I don't know that it's going to matter. I don't know that they're going to get it together offensively in the way that they need to, with all the injuries they have and obviously with the personnel that they lost. And that's unfortunate to say, but I think that, you know, it's great that their goaltending is doing so well, but in the end, I don't know that it's going to matter.
Brad Tree Living has been on record saying, you know, we are looking for a one for one, you know, roster for roster type of move. And I was hearing the other day that Morgan Riley's name is out there right now. So they don't want to touch that group, the Nyses and the Nylanders and the Matthews. But the one biggest thing that I've noticed with the club, and all your points are absolutely true, Emma, with this, is that just the body language, just they just don't look like they, to be quite honest, they don't look like they care enough to play, and they think maybe the game's going to come to them. And now they have to work a little bit harder, I think, because, yeah, you can't replace Mitch at all. And there's a lot of the guys on the team that are much different than him. You can't even, you try to bring in three, four different players, you're not going to replace number 16. But I just think the body language with them, even if they win and they score, there's something different about it. So hopefully for them, they can figure it out. But I don't know. I'm with you. It's always something to talk about in Toronto. Always something to talk about in Toronto. last one. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say that is true about Toronto. I think it's always going to be something. You know, the media market, the fan base, I mean, they're ruthless and they expect excellence. And I think that if you, like you said, the body language, the apathy, or at least perceived apathy, that's perceived, something that it it's harder to get over. You know, guys go mm-hmm. through slumps, injuries happen, you know, it's yep. a long season, all of that. But it's that mental shift that mm-hmm. that needs to happen, I think.
It seems different. Last one before we do 77 seconds. The Olympics coming up. Hopefully they have the ice ready. We'll see. Don't know what they're going to do if they don't do that in Milan. USA, Canada, of course, Doug Armstrong, Billy Guerin, both on record saying, boy, you know, we have so many different guys to choose from. It's a good problem to have at the end of the day. Anybody on the bubble that kind of you're looking at, maybe just one from each nation, if you will, that you would like to see on the team that perhaps maybe at the end of it all, the GMs and the upper brass will not, in fact, get them on that roster.
So right now, I feel like the bubble, honestly, for both teams has been very fluid. I feel like it's been changing quite a bit. And a trend that I've started to see, at least in the chatter, in the conversation, has been, you know, obviously USA going for brute physicality force, the Tkachuks. And what I would not want to see, I've heard Tom Wilson's name out there for Canada. Mm-hmm. I think you only put Tom Wilson on your roster if you're trying to answer for the Tkachuks. And I'm not saying that there isn't a place for that, but I think in the Olympic and this international competition, it's not the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's not the same thing. So you don't need the same kind of, you know, fighting fire with fire. I think you should go for more skill. For USA, I don't think he's going to make it, but I really think that's unfortunate. I would go with a guy like Cole Caulfield. I think that he is one of your better offensive, you know, dynamic offensive players. He's a finisher. He's a goal scorer. And USA needs that. They need more of that. Of course, they are going to go for the, you know, it seems as though they're trying to go for the, we're going to win the physical battle, which they may win that battle. But at the end of the day, that may not be the battle that matters. So that's a guy like Cole Caulfield, I think I would like to see on USA's roster. For Canada, I don't even know if he's considered on the bubble anymore or if people are considering him in. But I don't see how you can't include Seth Jarvis on your roster if you're Canada. He's been exceptional to start the year, just the things he's been doing in Carolina. So that's who I would like to see make it for Canada.
Imagine we see a beginning of the Four Nations game that we saw when these two teams.
Yeah, right.
You talk about the physicality with that. That was unreal. Yeah, again, let's hope that things, I'd be curious to see. It's always the debate too at the end of it, whenever these nations put out the roster, it's more of, that's fine who's on it, but who didn't make it? So let's debate why these two didn't make it, or three, and why these three, in fact, made it. So we'll see. Going to be fun. Okay, 77 seconds with you, 7 questions. I think I have one more, so it's probably 8, but no timer, as you know the drill. So here we go. I alluded to this before. Question 1, will the ice in Milan be ready by the time the Olympics begin?
I hope so. I think it has to be. It has to be. There's no way choice. It can't be.
Who wins the gold?
Canada.
I mean, Canada. You said that quietly.
yeah, I know.
Yeah. Okay. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough.
Great. I don't think it's going to be a runaway victory. No. I think Canada pulls it out.
Trick question here, maybe trick question, we'll see. Do you favor Celsius or Fahrenheit more?
Celsius for energy drinks, yes. But
that's where I was going with that.
Yes, for actual temperature, Celsius means nothing to me, so got to go Fahrenheit with that.
Here's a quick thing for you. The easiest way to get it as close as possible, if you're converting Celsius to Fahrenheit, you double it and add 30. That's what I learned years ago, and you're pretty much almost bang on. So if it's 70, then what is it? You double it, 20, 40, add 30, then you get to 70. So it's 20 degrees. So there you go. Will the Blue Jays sign Bo Bichette?
No.
Really?
I don't think they will.
Best part of working for the Wicket?
What a callback.
yeah. This crack research team spent hours.
Wow. Yes. For those who don't know, The Wicket was my high school newspaper from Georgetown Visitation. I was a deputy editor in chief. and a sports editor when I was a senior. I think I liked that I was just being able to be myself. I went to an all-girls private school. Sports was not really a big thing, at least, you know, writing about sports, but it was something that I wanted to do. It was something I was interested in. And at the time, it meant I got to kind of rag on the Capitals a lot because I went to school in DC and they were not very good. And I also went to high school with George McPhee's daughter. So that actually didn't go over too well when I would rag on the Capitals, but it was lots of fun.
So you're born in Washington, right?
Yes.
Okay. Reside in Nashville. Caps and Preds meet in the Cup Final. Who do you cheer for?
Caps.
Sorry?
Well, see, the thing is, I was born in Washington, but I did not grow up a Caps fan. My parents are both from Pennsylvania, so I was actually raised a very big Penguins fan. Penguins are actually what got me into hockey, so... It's hard for me to root for the Capitals, but I've got a little bit of hometown pride if it comes to that.
Caps and Preds, we shall see. What do you like most about being a coach at Solicor?
It's so empowering. It's so fun to do something that was completely out of my comfort zone, something that one of my friends encouraged me to try. And I said, absolutely not. Are you kidding me? I can't be a fitness instructor. It really, you know, I tried something new and it's been so rewarding, so fulfilling, helping other people get stronger, seeing them achieve their goals. You know, it helps you feel stronger and like you can achieve your own goals. So it's very rewarding.
Helping someone else. It's certainly a great thing in life. Last one. I'm going to throw some Spanish at you. You're very good in Spanish from what I understand. And so give me a break with this one just to let you know. Here we go. ¿Cómo te sentiste cuando Michael Bublé te dio hola?
Increíble. It was wonderful.
Can you translate for people?
Yes. So Michael Bublé was in the house for the Predators game against the Vancouver Canucks a couple weeks ago. Obviously, Bublé in the news right now for his Canucks fandom. I'm not sure why he was in Nashville, why he was at the game, but I mean, why not?
Yeah,
if you're Michael Bublé, why not? He can do it every once. So he was there. He was down in the on the ice level outside the Canucks locker room. He was chatting it up with Brock Besser after the game, and I was walking by. It was funny because I noticed I was actually, in full disclosure, I was trying to go to the bathroom, but trying to get to the where the women's restroom is, there was like a line of security standing there. I was like, what's going on here?
Okay.
And that's when I realized, I was like, oh, that's Michael Bublé right there. And so I was just kind of standing waiting for him to move along, and he looked right at me and said, hi, how's it going? And I got a little starstruck. That was my first concert ever, was Michael Bublé.
I'm
a big fan of his, so that was a big moment for me.
So it was meant to be when you went did.
I did eventually make it to the bathroom in case
you did. I was gonna see the security finally went. How was my Spanish? Was it all right?
Yeah, well, I understood you, so.
I know, but you're really good in Spanish, so I'll take that as fine. Emma, thank you. Always fun, whether it's this or SiriusXM or anything else I do. I always appreciate the time, so thank you for this.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
This has been Pucks in 7, available on the SiriusXM app and wherever you get your podcasts.